Hello once again. Welcome back to the Gentlemen's League. And when I say Gentlemen's League, it's quite an interesting league. We had AB on it last evening, but I've got some cricket nerds on the show. And this has been a dream come true for me. Quite the moment. I mean, the world is going after people for reasons to take responsibility for India's test loss against South Africa. We lost against New Zealand quite some time ago. Joining me today are two people. One of them is of course, a data scientist who worked with the Indian team for more than a couple of years when Rahul Dravid was at helm. Himanish Ganju, sitting on my left. Sorry, obviously, you're right, probably. Welcome on the show, Himanish. And Jared, a cricket writer, a cricket filmmaker, today a cricket geek, talking everything in bar charts, pie charts, whatever you want to say. And he's got a blackboard behind him. Welcome, gentlemen. Welcome, both of you, to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for having me. It's a dream come true for me to be with Jared and you.
We might break the internet here. Like, this might be the highest nerd quota that the internet actually allows in cricket, right? Like, it might, you know, I feel sorry for, there's just people around the world just swooning at the fact that the three of us are on the screen at the same time.
No, I just want to put a disclaimer. I'm sure this is going to be a slightly longer show because of having prepped at what we want to talk about, each one of us. And I found it fascinating. I do not even know where to begin, but Jared's got a little lesser to talk about with in terms of presentations. So Jared, I'll begin with you and set the context right. India's lost a series against South Africa. South Africa did incredibly well. Themba Bavuma doesn't know how to lose a test match. If they want to lose a test match, he sits out with injury and they lose a test match. That's for another day. But there's been quite the talk about how Gautam Gambhir is responsible for all of it, right? Sure, there are reasons that people point out to it. But I'm quite tired, Jared. If we do have a counter narrative to it, it looks like we are supporting someone, and I've got nothing to support Gautam here for. I want to get to the root of the problem, and that's once again an attempt with respect to what I'm doing here. Himanish is not related to anyone, so isn't Jared, so am I not. So we will take a very neutral stance and try to get to the problem, to the bottom of it, as to what's unfolded in Indian cricket over the years. Where do we need to go to? Jared, I'll begin with you. The narratives of heroes and villains, you're a filmmaker yourself. What do you think of that?
It's basically how cricket has gone for a very long period of time, which is we look at, because the 11 is together, right? So whatever reason, we're the only sport that forgot to do substitutes, right? So football doesn't start with substitutes. I think football comes in about 1950s with substitutes. And for whatever reason, we just never added that. And because of that, we fixate on the 11 so much more than any other sport would. Because, you know, instead of you being retired, you should really just be on the bench and be brought back out when they need to. I mean, maybe you're the issue here. I don't know. Himanish was saying that off air. I'm just repeating what he said. Because of that, you have to start in every game and you have to play in every game. And I think that actually changes the way we think about cricket. And so it means that we fixate on either the player who's going to get dropped. So remember when it was KL Rahul for like forever, right? Then it might be the chairman of selectors or it might be the head coach. And we fixate on all those things. And you talk about heroes and villains and everything. I don't think Gautam Gambhir should have been picked as coach. And I've got many different reasons why I believe that as the case. But he's not the reason that India isn't making any runs, because India wasn't making any runs beforehand.
Sorry to interrupt, Jared. That's another topic. We will debate it separately. But today you need to tell me if he is the problem for us not defending properly.
Well, no, because they weren't making runs before he came into the team and they're not making runs now. So I think this is a structural issue with the fact that, and Himanish can go into the Hawkeye data in a little bit, but a bunch of different things have changed around the world, right? The way you play spin has fundamentally changed in the last 10 years, and younger Indian players play it when they're coming up in a certain way without DRS and Hawkeye that you can't do at the top level. Ranji Trophy pitches have changed, right? And I know we have a graphic. I'm sure we can flick that up at one stage. You could see in the last 6 years how much Ranji Trophy has changed, because traditionally, India, the average against spin was quite high and the average against seam was way lower. And at the moment, they're neck and neck. That tells me that there is a structural change within the wickets and the way they're playing Ranji Trophy. You know, you talked about off air about the fact that, you know, what happens with independent curators. We've also got the fact that these games are played during winter. India wanted more fast bowlers, so they put more grass on the wickets. There's many different things that have happened. And then on top of all that, at the international level, I would argue that this is the toughest time in the history of cricket for Indian batters, right? Because you've got two things going on at the same time. because of you and your mate, they made all the pitches spin sideways, right? And so all your batting averages at Holmes went down. Look at his face. He had no idea I was going to leave with that either. And then separate to that, you have the wobble ball. So all the batting averages against seam around the world have dropped. And where do you usually get your confidence? You come home and you make lots of runs at home. Well, no Indian batters are making runs at home because the pitches are low scoring pitches. So even if you do well, you're only still going to get an average 35 or 40. You're not going to average 55 or 60 like you might have in previous generations. So that's like four different structural things we've just talked about. And if you want to add the fifth one, it's sweep shots, right? That traditionally Indians use their feet so brilliantly, they did not need to sweep the ball. And if you look at it, the three countries that never really swept at all were the West Indies, Australia, and India. And they were using your footwork and coming down. Whereas England, New Zealand, Pakistan, and South Africa are sweepers, right? In modern cricket, I think you need to be able to do both because spinners are a lot quicker now. They're a lot more direct into the surface. And DRS has probably changed it as well. You can only defend, I honestly, against a really good spinner, I think you can only defend so long if the ball's spinning before you have to play the sweep shot now. And you would have been around when Rahul Dravid started telling the batters, learn to sweep. Right. They were literally told that. And we could see in the last couple of years that Indian players have started sweeping, whereas traditionally Indian players did not sweep. They were right down in the last 10 years. They haven't swept at all. They sweep at about 3.5% of this is how much they've changed in the last couple of years. So they've gone from a non-sweeping culture over the previous decade to suddenly sweeping. But the other thing, and Himanesh would probably know this as well. In fact, both of you would know this, that in my mind, you basically call someone a sweeper if they sweep more than 5% of the time, right? Mm-hmm. The guys who sweep usually sweep like 20 or 25% of the time, or it's like 0 and 1%. There's almost no guys who just do it occasionally. And if you look at England, they sweep at 7%, 7.5% as a team, and India's at 3.5%. So you're talking about a completely different style of playing cricket over the last couple of years. Sorry, mate.
Just for context, for this series against spin, India swept 4.2% balls and South Africa swept around 6.5%. So it's higher than their historical average or recent historical average, but still lower than, So
The fact that India is sweeping and have taken it on board was clearly evident in the Eden Gardens test when Jadeja swept his first ball from Simon Harmer, or maybe the early part of his innings.
Yeah, right early on.
I quite agree with Jared, and there's another layer to this that is it's not spoken about enough. I'm sure when you see pitches where like balls turning over and seaming around a lot of flack is received, right? Like people want to see the 5-day test match. I get people telling me that we pay for 5 days and all that. And I mean, sometimes I think you pay only for 2 days and then you start buying tickets again around the world. That particular system has changed quite a bit. The seasonal pass is something that's gone out of the window. So let's forget about that for a starter. What I'm trying to get at is there is WTC points at stake. If you draw a particular test match, it's 4 points. And that's going to cost you a percentage and eventually going to lead you into not qualifying for the final. It's something that's serious at stake that every team has taken it on board. It's not just India. India plays to its strength because most of the other teams weren't finding answers for what India was asking of them in terms of batting or in terms of bowling. And teams were found wanting. Now, when you look at what's panned out, I'm going to go to Himanesh now and ask him how exactly the South Africa series panned out. And let's look at going into the roots as he takes us through some numbers. Yes, Himanesh. Welcome on the show, Himanesh. And thank you for doing it once again.
Thanks a lot. So this has been a trend over the past 4-ish years since the WTC.
I'll apologize on behalf of Himanesh. He's a great data scientist, but he doesn't put both his eyes on the screen while he's talking. So I'll apologize on his behalf.
What's going on? Can you see where the camera is? Just keep your head still, dude.
Can you see me now?
Yes. Yeah, I can.
Yeah. Okay. So this has been happening for the past 4 years since the WTC points have come in, where India started going for like trickier and trickier pitches, not just pitches that turned, but also pitches that had up and down bounce because they wanted to win, right? And they wanted to factor out the toss from the equation. If you have a classical pitch in India and you lose the toss, then you're always behind the game, right? This is the first principle of spin. You've got to turn the ball. So you look at the average turn that the players have got. I don't have data for Akshar, so let's not count him here. But Harmer has got more than 4 degrees of spin. Maharaj has got more than 4 degrees of spin. The Indian spinners have all got more than... So if you look at these three, they've got less than 4 degrees of spin. And the crucial part here is Jadeja and Washington don't get much turn anyway. But Kuldeep also doesn't get more than 4 degrees of spin. If you go to the next slide, Yeah, so basically, if you plot the batting average versus the amount of turn that you get, right? So more than 5 degrees of turn is lethal. So more than 5 degrees of turn is very, very hard to play. So how many balls are you bowling like that? So for Harman and Maharaj, it was more than 30%. So 1 in 3 balls are turning more than 5 degrees. Whereas you compare for Kuldeep Jadeja in Washington, it's 18, 15 and 15, which is very, very low. So
how much of this is the speed?
See that.
How much of this is just that they're bowling slower? Because like I can spin the ball as much as Ash can, but it's so slow that everyone in the world could smash me. So I'd never be able to play international cricket.
Basically, this comes down to a couple of factors, right? If you look at the speeds for Harmer, they're much slower. The speed variation is much more. And Harmer is bowling from a release height of 2.3 meters. So combined with the revs he puts on the ball, because he's bowled thousands and thousands of overs at county, right? He knows how to put revs on the ball. So combined with the height, the dip and the speed variation, he's getting more turn. Essentially, what's happening at the end is he is getting more turn. But if you look at the dip, for example, for Washington, if we can look at the dip slides, what happens physically is that if you put the same revs on the ball, but you have more dip, you'll get more turn because the dip makes the ball bang into the pitch harder and grip harder, right? So Washington bowls with a lot of dip, but he's not getting a lot of turn because of the revs he's not putting on the ball. And he's bowling much faster, right? So the turn you get from the ball is a combination of many factors. And for Harmer, that was perfect. Although he's not getting much dip, he is bowling from a taller height. He's putting more revs in the ball. So he has that turn, right? So,
is it possible, just look at that, is it possible to say then that he's come to India, because he's such a master, Harmer, like, you know, you watch him in county cricket, he's really good on flat pitches that aren't even helping him. Is it possible that he's just worked out, I don't need any overspin here, so he's not getting any dip because he's just putting side spin on the ball?
So he's putting a combination of things. So what happens usually is when a spinner bowls slower or he loops up the ball, they'll put overspin on the ball.
Yeah.
So it could be possible that the balls in which he's getting 7 degrees of turn, he's putting overspin. But on average, because he's a finger spinner, right? On average, his value will be lower than the wrist is in Washington, for example. But overall, in combination, he's bowling with those variations to get the turn on those balls. If you look at the Rahul wicket, for example, that had a lot of dip. That had about 1.5 meters per second square of dip. So that dipped in front of him, opened the gate, and then turned in 9 degrees. So the turn is not only a function of the revs he's putting on the ball, but also the dip. And he's so tall, right? So 2.3... For context, like Kyle Jamieson has a release point of 2.2 or something. So 2.3 is like devilish. Like it's very high. So
yeah, I think Jasper Bumrah is like 1.95
or something. Yeah, isn't it? Yeah.
So it's really, really high. I mean, you do get finger spinners who do it. Usually right arm finger spinners have a higher release because left arm finger spinners fall over when like, how nerdy did he want us to get on this podcast? But left arm finger spinners.
I'm quite enjoying it. Yeah, it's nice.
If you look at left arm fingers, this is why Akshar Patel is such an interesting left arm finger spinner because he stands up very straight.
Yeah.
Most of them fall over. And so even someone like Suleiman Ben, who was like 6'7", didn't have as high a release as he should have. Whereas off spinners usually stay really upright. Basically, what I'm saying is off spinners have better posture, but it's all about bowling to right handers. For a left hander, it makes sense to.
Like off spinners are bowling straight down the wicket. So
exactly.
They're taller while they release the ball, versus left arm spinners are going around the wicket. So they're.
So the other thing with that dip that I found interesting is I would have said, without looking at Hawkeye data, that Maharaj and Jadeja are similar kinds of bowlers. They're not tall left arm finger spinners, or you know, in that kind of way. They've got them and maybe Shakib Al Hasan. They have that sort of lower, slingier style of left arm finger spin. But what's interesting there is Maharaj gets a lot of drop. Right? And Jadeja doesn't get as much. Yeah. So one's sliding the ball through and the other one's getting it up and down. So again, even though they're both similar looking, they're not bowling the same deliveries, are they?
Yeah. And also Maharaj is a bit slower than Jadeja.
Yeah, lots slower.
Jadeja doesn't vary his pace at all. It's always been above 90. He goes up to 100 sometimes. but with Maharaj, you get it a lot slower. So that's why he can get that turn, right? So
Ash, can I ask you about the paces? Because this is why everyone keeps saying to me, oh, the Indian spinners are bowling too quick and they need to slow down on these pitches. Right?
That's not
an easy thing to do.
This is quite a fascinating conversation, actually, Jared and Himanish. Because as you guys were talking, I was just going through those numbers and seeing why Washington has a very high dip rate. If that data comes up again, I can tell you why he has a high dip rate. It's pretty straightforward. He's able to get the seam pointing a lot towards the keeper and towards the fine leg slip. The seam is always pointing like that, if you know what I mean. It's not even at 45. It's probably a little higher. I think Jared's searching for a ball.
I'm looking for my goal to show you. But yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah. Look, many a times, right? Many a times, there you go. Washington's dip rate is very high. Maharaj's dip rate is again higher. And a lot of people confuse dip rate with respect to how much it is spun. It's actually quite the opposite. Yes, there is a certain amount of overspin, but there's also an amount of spin that's dragging the ball backwards. In many ways, the ball is being backspun to a certain degree that the ball drops, if that does make sense. For you to be able to get the ball to fizz off the surface, all three bowlers that you saw there, Washington Sundar and Kuldeep Yadav and Keshav Maharaj, are people who are not able to get the ball to fizz off the surface in a forward direction, right? If you look at the dismissal of Themba Bavuma for starters, if Themba had gone forward and gone backwards on the ball, he would have had ample time to just adjust on that ball. But there are times when people play on the back foot and it just hits the glove and it goes to backward short leg. Those are the times the body weight has been transferred without any leakage on the ball in the direction of the batsman. Sometimes it is very hard to explain, but I'm trying to explain to for you to be able to visually make sense of it. The beauty, though, of spin bowling is, Jared, you were speaking about pitches spinning and all that sort of stuff. Pitches don't spin. The bowlers spin the ball, actually. And when we talk about spin, it looks quite easy because it's not physically very difficult on the eye to watch out for. But there are several facets of the spin I would like to talk about. Spin bowling is not about putting the rotations alone on the ball. That's the first part of it. Now, the second part of it is to be able to dump the ball with so many rotations on the spot that you want to dump it in. The third part of it is to be having the ability to dump the ball in different places with the same amount of rotation at your own will. Now, the fourth facet of it is to be able to move the head of the batsman around in his defensive technique with all these facets to create the error, right? Now, four things are absolutely basic. Now, the fifth part is for you to be able to understand what the batsman's looking to do, whether he's looking to defend, whether he's looking to attack. If yes, where are his zones of attack? Okay, now the sixth part is to know how you can make him feel uncomfortable, which is sometimes the reason why Anil Kumble was more successful without having the ball to do a lot of magic. If you go and look at those numbers, Anil would be probably straighter, homing in on the stumps all the time, but he knew how to make the batsman uncomfortable. And when he was talking off air on that show, he was talking about how the batsman need to be dragged away from the stumps, right? Now, these are six aspects. Now, the seventh aspect is to understand what the batter is doing and to have the ability to be able to deliver the ball in that particular instance, knowing the ebbs and flows of the game in order to derive a mistake out of the batter. Now, it's a very complex situation altogether, right? And these are all put together. The eighth point is we are talking about spin, dip, speed, mean, angle, so on and so forth. And Murali Karthik was talking about where the ball was being released, close to the ear, front of the ear, behind, and several release points. Let's not even get into it because it's going to make it even more complex. The final passage, or probably the one that hits a home run, is the fact that you need to know how to get wickets. You can look great doing a certain skill, but if you do not know how to get wickets, that's a skill that's not spoken about enough, which needs to be developed right from bowling the volume of overs. And that's why it leads me to your topic, Jared, of not bowling the volumes of overs that people do in Ranji Trophy, right?
Yes.
Yes, Imanish.
Yeah, so on this point, I was reading somewhere that before you made your debut, you bowled about 1,300 overs in Ranji Trophy. And Washington has bowled about 500 overs. So it's the art of getting wickets using the skills that you have that you so, you know, talked about nicely. You have to build that over bowling, you know, 5,000 overs, let's say, or 1,000 overs or 2,000 overs. I don't think they have that sort of experience yet, although they have a lot of control. If you look at the length numbers, for example, our bowlers are bowling much more in the good length compared to the other bowlers. So if you look at the good length percentage, so this is the traditional good length test wicket. The Indian bowlers are bowled much more in the good length, but they're not getting wickets. If you look at the averages for our bowlers, they are much higher. So that's because they haven't combined the control. So they have a lot of good control, right? But they haven't combined the control with the skill to turn the ball and take wickets with the combination of drift, variation, dip and turn, right? Like you said. So I think that's a long-term issue and we'll talk about it, I think. But I cut you off somewhere, so...
I have travelled the cricketing world, and so I've collected two things, the phone numbers of random taxi drivers and overseas SIM cards. Rideshare apps have fixed the first part, and Sally is doing the second. Now, all you need is their eSIM on whatever plan works for you. You activate it and you can use it anywhere in the cricketing world. It helps you save money. It is a global solution to a global problem. Stop fiddling with tiny SIMs and get the one that does it all. Go to selly.com Good Areas and use the code Good Areas to get an exclusive 15% off your first purchase. Fly free with Selly.
No, that's fine. So it's a fair point that you brought up, Himnesh. Let me give you a visual representation of what just went by. If you speak about Simon Harmer, he actually bowled a lot of hit me balls.
Yeah.
But the players didn't hit it. For example, Sai Sudarshan's dismissal of the back foot was quite a short ball, right? Yeah. Why do these things happen? Because Simon Harmer is bowling different lengths at different speeds from different release areas because he's done that for Essex over the last 10 years, not probably 10 years, I don't know exactly if I could be wrong with the numbers, but he's done it in volumes, right? And volumes, you spoke about 1,300 overs in Ranji Trophy, but one thing that I would always credit for is me playing club cricket in Chennai. I would have bowled the double of the number of overs that you spoke about in club cricket in Chennai with my formative years. Southern part of the country has always boasted of a very huge spin cupboard. The reason for that is that the southern part of the country, especially in the winters during Ranji season, always was a touch more warmer and it had more spin in the surface. Now, there is a neutral curator theme that's happened where the natural surfaces are being made into surfaces that need to seam and swing around a little bit more, bounce around a little bit more, like Jared said, which is reflecting in how we play fast bowling a lot more conveniently than we play spin bowling. The art is slightly lost in that fashion. And again, pushing back to that Simon Harmer and the length accuracy, you'll see a lot of people putting cones on the pitches by the side and ask you to deliver the ball there. That, in my view, is the most overrated drill that you can ever find. Because that's asking you to get into a mechanical mode of putting the ball there. Wicket-taking is not putting the ball there. Wicket-taking is playing with the batter, right?
That's whole Monty Panesar thing, isn't it? Of like playing, you know, Monty Panesar's best delivery was as good as any spin bowler in the world, but that's what he had. He had his best delivery. Whereas what you were talking about before is you come to a pitch or you come to a batter and you're like, okay, well, I need to bowl wider on the crease to this guy. I need to bowl closer. This is a pitch where, you know, I mean, you worked on this for years in Australia of using more overspin in Australia, because side spin in Australia doesn't really help unless you're a wrist spinner, right? That's the thing. That's that sort of street smart, you know, level of cricket. And not every spin bowler is going to have that. There are a lot of like one-dimensional spin bowlers, the same that there are one-dimensional batters and one-dimensional pace bowlers. And then that other sort of street smart thing is, okay, so I'm in this situation now. And you watch Simon Harmer, maybe Graham Swann would be another one. Obviously yourself would be there. Whereas that's one kind of bowler, whereas Nathan Lyon has taken years to get to anywhere near that level because he would come in and bowl the same ball over and over again and it didn't work in Asia. Doesn't mean he's not a great bowler. What it means is he isn't as variable. And I think that's one of Simon Harmer's incredible tricks, is that maybe because he grew up in South Africa where the pitches were never in his advantage, and then he went to Essex and they still weren't
Mind you, Jared, I've played a game or two in Essex. The bounce and turn that you get there is quite fabulous.
I think that might be after Simon Harmer started taking wickets.
True that. But it's still not the same that you get in India. Just to give you a small example, driving away from Himanish, whenever I bowled in Australia, the first time I went to Australia in 2011, when I bowled the ball, the only thing I knew as a young spinner is when I'm in trouble, when the batsman's challenging me, is to spin the ball more, right? Not necessarily where it lands. It's a huge, steep learning curve, but it's like a combination lock. Spin bowling is like a combination lock. You would have seen Anil Kumble get some wickets with his top spinner Googly later on in his career, but he got more wickets off it because he bowled a quickish leg break. That's change of pace. There is a difference in drop when he bowls that ball. It's like more like a combination lock where you need to have everything to be able to assemble it in the right order to be able to derive a mistake or like force a mistake from the batsman. To have it is extremely critical. And I was telling Washi on the day over the phone few months ago that whenever I went to Australia and came back, I literally had to unlearn my skill to get to work in India, because the overspin sits in the pitch in India. It just sits. It just doesn't go off the surface. And you speak about different surfaces, right? The last one that we play at Guwahati is a red soil surface. If India had a culture of having a test center, you have 30 test centers, but if you're going to have red soil pitches on the square available in every test center, it's going to make the life of these cricketers a lot more easier. Because when you try to make a clay wicket in the eastern part of the country spin a little bit, you just can't. It just doesn't work.
So likewise, I was going to say, when you came to Australia the first time, I actually thought you bowled really well, and no one takes wickets in Australia, and that's not sucking up to you because I'll slag you off later, but I thought you bowled really well, but no spinners do well in Australia, right? And I thought you held your own. But compared to what you did at the end of your career, right, you were a completely different bowler in Australia, and at that stage, you know, a much more useful force. But you talk about experience, right? So this is in the last test match. Now, Australia's an old side, don't get me wrong. But Australia's total first-class matches for their 11 is 1,577 first-class matches, right? India is 759. The closest to India is Bangladesh on 1,084. So every other top eight side, I don't have West Indies here, so maybe West Indies is lower. But every other top eight, top nine side has played, their 11 has played more than 1,000 first-class games, and India is at 759. Like, it's miles off. So how do you learn how to do that? And you're going up against someone like Simon Harmer and Keshav Maharaj, who are very, very experienced playing around the world, who've played so much cricket at this time. Mitchell Santner, even Ajaz Patel at this point, right? There is a bit of a difference at times with these sorts of things. And then not every player learns. That, your super skill really is the ability to be like, I need to do this here and I need to do that here. As we said before, Monty Panesar could play 1,000 test matches and he's still going to just come in and bowl that beautiful curving left arm finger spin, pitching on middle stump and spinning away at the same pace every single time, right? Because that's what he does. And we've got to remember that Simon Harmer and Keshav Maharaj, and Maharaj didn't even have a great series, but these are top level spinners who are really, really experienced and are used to bowling on all kinds of different surfaces and having to adjust.
Interestingly enough, Maharaj and I, we go back to quite the way at Rajasthan Royals, we developed a nice camaraderie, and he was speaking to me on and off. We speak a little bit about spin bowling. It's like the spin bowling sort of battalion that we formed, the team that we formed. And he genuinely worked on bowling a lot of side spin. Fortunately or unfortunately enough for him, he didn't have the greatest of series because he came up against a lot of lefties. And also, in India, if you do have to challenge the batters, it has to be on both sides of the edge. And Simon Harmer had the ability to hit the pads a lot more. He took it away from the stumps a lot more. He dropped the ball on the batter a lot more. He challenged them with different aspects. But it does drive me onto the other side, Jared. We've had an absolute, nerdy talk about spin bowling, but the other side of it is how you defend it. Just to throw it on the quadrant, like look at KL Rahul defending towards the end of the day four when you're looking to save a test match. Simon Harmer actually has bowled a lovely delivery that is at the completion of that package, but that's quite a harmless delivery, 7th, 8th off stump. You're not going to get out LBW for being struck at that off stump. He probably had a silly point, I'm not sure. Cover's not there, point's not there. He's gone there, played a very softish dink. Where does this leave us with the defensive technique of the batters? Is it a shortage in defensive technique? Where do you leave that with the batters?
I think that what has happened in the last 10 to 15 years probably hasn't always been talked about enough, that essentially the way that you play spin has fundamentally changed, right? The best example of this is Rahul Dravid's letter to KP, right, in KP's book, which I also reprinted in my book as well, because it's literally Rahul Dravid admitting that the game is changing and that you have to play left-arm fingerspin differently. KP didn't have an issue with left-arm fingerspin until DRS changed the way that umpires gave it out. And on top of that, what starts to happen is, if you go back and watch Bishan Bedi bowl, right, look at the lines Bishan Bedi bowls. He quite often bowls outside off stump for long periods of time. Some of that is, as you said before, it's to move the batter's head. But some of it is because he wasn't bowling for bold and LBW. He was bowling to have people caught at slip. When was the last time Jadeja bowled like outside the off stump consistently, unless he was trying to slow the scoring down? Left arm finger spinners almost exclusively bowl at the stumps. And when I was a kid, I remember Pat Simcox, who was a very technically correct off spinner, would bowl over the wicket. Could you imagine? You only do that when you're bored, right? Like off spinners don't bowl over the wicket to left-handers anymore, right? I actually think off spinners should bowl around the wicket to right-handers more, but that's a completely different conversation for another day. But it would be silly to look at a test off spinner now coming over the wicket to a left-hander, because you take LBW and probably bold out of the question, right? So now, what does every left-hander have to face from an off spinner? It's right arm around the wicket, pitchy on middle stump, straightening and everything else. That's because this is such a weird segue, but the reason that Richard Hadlee was a near perfect bowler is because Richard Hadlee would pitch the ball a middle and leg stump and swing it away. If it kept straight, it would hit middle stump or off stump. And if it swung a long way, he would get your outside edge. So he could get you bowled, LBW, caught in the cordon at will. That's what spinners do now. And I think it took a little while for spinners to understand that they needed to bowl a little bit quicker and a little bit more at the stumps under DRS. Because if you go back and watch cricket in the 90s, you could basically, there's a great clip that goes online every now and again of Dean Jones just like literally getting hit straight in front of middle stump, but having his foot slightly forward. The umpire like, oh, that's not out. There's just no way that would be given out automatically now. And I think that took a while. And that's what we were talking about when we mentioned before, the sweeps and everything. So I don't think you could just stand and defend. If you've got Akshar Patel bowling at the top of his game like he was a couple of years ago, what are you supposed to do? His straight ball hits leg stump, as Jimenez pointed out. His
spinning ball hits off stump.
Yeah, his spinning ball hits off stump. And if he really rags it and you push your hands, you're caught at slip or by the keeper. People don't understand how dangerous it is to face spinners anymore. It has really changed the game. And then you add, as you said before, World Test Championship pitches, right? So India do it first, and then Pakistan start doing it. And they realize, let's just make these pitches spin. And as Jimenez said, it's not just the spin. It's quite often the bounce on top of it.
I don't want to share a conversation with one of the Pakistani cricketers a couple of years ago. And I mean, it's not the right thing to do now, but there was a conversation on the kind of pitches they played. I think those pitches are quite hard. They don't miss the stump at all. They hit you like at the base of the stump many a times. They don't bounce very much. It's very hard to play. But nevertheless, Jared, where you left off in that conversation made me think about something. And this is something I've spoken to Jimenez a lot about. One is like spinning the ball and delivering it where you want. But of course, landing the ball within the stump and still hitting the stump is an absolutely underrated facet of spin bowling, because
it's basically a game of angles. You have to make them defend, but also keep the stumps in play.
One of the conversations I've had with Kuldeep, and it's a largely spinners conversation, right? It's like a spinners union. And when we have the conversation is, what do you do essentially when you travel, when you play in Australia or wherever you play, the ability of a spinner in the first innings where you got nothing to work with is to keep an end held up for the fast bowlers to basically rotate. And how do you hold an end up? If you do not have the ability to land the ball within the stumps, hitting the stumps at different speeds through the over, you're literally going for a boundary every single over, because the surfaces don't offer you anything. You can hit through the line on the up in countries like Australia. So the ball's got to literally hang in the air, still drop down, pitch on the stumps and still hit the stumps for the batter to be worried about playing around his front pad. Only if you put a lot of revolutions is he's going to be worried about defending with his glove in front, right? It's going to go to short leg. So it's quite the art. And if you look at Kuldeep, the fact that he almost always to the right-hander when he's bowling over the stumps, lands the ball a touch outside off stump and he's begging the ball to come back in with his rotations. And that's why you find somebody like a Tristan Stubbs nicking off. But the moment you say, okay, look, I'm not picking it, Kuldeep's greatest strength is not the spinning ball. It's actually batsman not picking where it's going. Whether it's going straight on, whether it's spinning outside, or whether it's coming back in. And once the batsman says, you know what, I'm not picking this, I'm going to go play with a horizontal bat, is when the trouble actually starts beginning, you know? And that's essentially why I think you should have the ability to spin the ball, land it within the line of the stumps, and still hit the stumps. Because when it skips the eye line of the batter, he's going to say, that's outside off stump, I'm going to sweep.
Yeah, and I think if you go back, you have, if you look at traditional spinners, and maybe Graham Swan is one of the last traditional off spinners that we had that did this, who would literally pitch the ball outside off stump. I suppose Mohit Ali did it as well. Pitch it outside off stump and try and spin it back into the stumps a long way out, and that drifted everything. Because you go back and you watch Tim May when he was bowling with Shane Warne. Tim May never bowls out the stumps ever. And so Australian, English, New Zealand off spinners were all taught bowl outside the off stump, right, and then try and spin it back in and create that different kind of angle that we're talking about. But look at Nathan Lyon. Nathan Lyon doesn't really do that. He bowls a lot closer to the stumps than those other guys did.
And he changed. He changed, Jared.
But when he was young, he bowled the same way, didn't he? If you look at early Nathan Lyon, he bowled outside of stump and spun it back. And now he bowls overspin at stumps.
The conversations when Nathan Lyon came on the last tour was around generally how Nathan Lyon bowls outside off stump, and it's a lot more easier to face. Yeah. And when he came on the last tour, he obviously tried to bowl straighter from over the stumps, but he couldn't. So he started going around and pitching everything on the stumps. He knows that. And a lot of times, the first question that I get asked is, how do you get that ball in that seam position and not like that? It's quite a arduous task, Jared, because if you try to get the ball in that seam position, I don't have a ball lying next to me. Okay, I've got a tennis ball, so I don't know if it's going to work. So the ball, if let's say this is the seam, if it's upright and it's going to go like that, that's probably looking to spin the ball. But if it's going to go like that on a flat surface with the seam spinning horizontally, it's a completely different ball game. But how do you do that and still hit the surface and keep the ball on the stumps and hit the stumps?
Exactly. And it's doing all that. The other thing I would say is that, you know, and you've been a master at sort of looking at YouTube and looking at clips and all this sort of stuff. But we now see guys like Dom Bess come into the game, right? And Dom Bess is not like a world-class level spinner, but Dom Bess bowls into in, whereas traditionally, off spinners would bowl out to in. And, you know, basically what I mean is beforehand, the ball would drift away from the right hander and then spin back in. Whereas in Dom Bess's case, sometimes it even drifts into the right hander and then goes on to spin further. And so people like you work that. And I'm not saying you guys invented it, because I think older spinners sometimes could do this as well. But because you guys had the access to video and everything else, you realized that you could change that, which again means you're now drifting the ball towards the stumps and then spinning it into the stumps, which is a completely different thing.
It actually doesn't spin. It's more of a mirage, Jared. Like it's coming in the air and it just goes on the angle. Anyway, I'm going to dive back to Himanish to ask something very interesting, and that's been spoken about a lot, right, Himanish? We speak about one, how India is defended, and the other one is how Simon Harmer had a great series. Is there a differentiating point that sets Harmer away from the rest of the spinners? You brought about the numbers, but is there a differentiating point that says anything to say, okay, this is why he got the wickets?
Brian Lara used pot plants to work on his placement. John Wright glued his glove to his bat. Sachin Tendulkar dug up practice pitches. Tatenda Taibu cut the top off his bat. Claire Taylor used a hockey grip. Steve Smith was from tennis. Dean Jones would call phantom runs. And Victor Trumper turned the nets into a war zone to survive. The best batters in the world do whatever they have to make runs. We have told their stories in our new book, The Art of Batting.
See, it's a very complicated question to sort of see. You have multiple factors, right? You have speed, you have speed variation, you have dip, you have turn. Now, wicket taking comes about as a very complicated function of all these. So it's very hard to pinpoint what exact combination and what exact weight is coming together to get the wickets. But I'll tell you a very interesting thing. So when we try to predict wickets using machine learning, so let's say I have data about the ball, right? And I'm trying to predict what ball will take a wicket based on the length and the speed and the deviation and the swing. For pace, that works very well. But for spin, that doesn't work very well. And the reason I've been told is that for spin, the surrounding context matters a lot. So whatever's happening in that over or in that session matters a lot for whether you will take a wicket on a given ball. And I think that is the craft of setting up a wicket from a bowler, right? And Simon Harmer is doing that very well, because you know that you can't come down the track to him. Although he's bowling slow, but he can bowl it fast as well. So the surrounding context makes it very confusing for the batter to respond to each ball. Mm. And therein lies the complicated sort of result of him taking wickets. I mean, the turn is the biggest factor, right? If you get more balls turning more than 5 degrees, but to put those many revs on the ball and land it in the right spots is the art, right? And
you remember this off the top of your head, but it was you who told me it, but what's the average in test cricket when the ball spins more than 5 degrees?
Yeah, so I have a plot right here. So if you go more than 5 degrees, so 5 to 5.5 is 30, 5.5 to 6 is 20, 6 to 6.5 is 16.9, then 12, 14, 14, 10, 12, 15, 12. So basically after the 5 degree barrier, it falls from the 40s and the 50s to the 20s, basically.
Yeah.
So there's a sharp break there. The other break is between 1 and 2 degrees. So basically, if the surrounding context is telling you that the ball is turning, but then the ball doesn't turn because of whatever variation you did, right? It might be the seam or the speed or whatever. And the ball doesn't turn, then the average goes back to 20s, right?
I think the problem in my entire career was I spun it about 2.5 degrees consistently.
That's the worst zone to be in.
Yeah, yeah. That's why everyone averaged 100
when I bowled. In fact, I thought Himanish wrote an article where I spun the ball only 1.5, 2 degrees consistently through my career or something.
Yours was 3, 3.5, which is okay.
Yeah.
But that is the average. So the point is that you have to count the number of more than 5 degrees or between between 1 and 3 degrees, which are the balls that don't turn, right?
So I think if we were going ahead, if you think about it from a Joe Root, the way that Joe Root bats, right, where Joe Root either comes all the way forward or all the way back, which we then worked out that Rahul Dravid did the same thing against spin. For spinners, it would be the same thing. You don't want to spin at 3.5 degrees. You want to spin at 5 degrees or 0 degrees. So one ball that spins and over is probably enough to shock batters into worrying about that.
Yeah, I just want to give you a small example again to visually go back into that. I watched every ball of the test match and I was looking for something, you know, something to see the test match passages, ebbs and flows, how much one fights. It really induces the, you know, creative juices inside me. But if you look at the ball that KL Rahul got bowled for Simon Harmer, of course, it was a slightly newish ball. It would have fizzed a little bit more. I'm sure I understand all that. There was a delivery that Tristan Stubbs played off Kuldeep Yadav off the back foot. And it hit him on the pads and he found himself probably struck in line, but that ball missed the leg stump on DRS. It was a very similar ball, bowled at a similar line, but KL managed to hop forward on that while Tristan Stubbs managed to hop backwards on that. Tell me something about this, Jared. Like, is this a way and style with which people cope up with what they have to do? Is that a game plan or is it an ability of a batter to pick length? Because one person's played it on the front foot and the other's played it on the back foot and one has survived, the other one's gotten out.
So I've got this theory when I was writing my book that there are probably most batters either pick the ball on line or on length, right? So there's obviously a mix, right? And AB de Villiers picks on both and, you know, Garfield Sobers and Steve Smith pick on both. But there's a lot of batters, if you watch them, I think they probably are waiting for the line and then will play a shot based on the line or they're waiting on the length. And so I think in Tristan Stubbs's case, I've thought with Tristan Stubbs, he probably plays a little bit more on line than he does on length. And so sometimes you see him get himself in trouble because the ball, he's trying to hit under a ball that isn't there to hit under. You see it a lot in T20 cricket. And so I wonder if there's, and this is one of those things of now we know this, maybe, and you know, Jimenez, and once we get biomechanics, we might be able to pick these things up better. But now we know this, is there a way of training people so that they can pick that up? And that they can understand what they're doing naturally and then add to it.
Look, I think the game's going to move away a lot in terms of how you're training with what the technology is telling you, right? Like, I can't really draw a parallel with another sport, but you did speak about substitution in football. But with cricket, DRS is such a massive factor. Yeah. And Tristan playing off the back foot of a ball that's pitched wide outside off stump, trying to get outside the off stump, is a tactical way of training against the spinning ball. Like, how many times have you seen that the ball's pitched outside off stump and it's turned around your left hip and gone and hit the stumps? Sure, Shane Warne did it against Andrew Strauss from the potholes outside off stump. But it doesn't happen a lot. So I just feel like this is triggered from the fact that I am taking LBW on bowl out of the equation. Let me see, you want to... With such a defense, Stubbs managed to play 400 balls in that series. Isn't that quite incredible?
No, so, definitely. If you go back as well, I wrote about this in like 2008, 2009, because... And this is when the spinners were more conventional. But if you look at Hashim Amla, Callis, and I think AB de Villiers might have done it as well, they were the first guys I ever saw who would go right back and across against off spinners almost every time and try and take that LBW out of the play. So now it's harder to do that, right? Because you guys aren't bowling outside the stumps as much. But that basic idea makes sense. And if you watch how left-handers play pace bowling from around the wicket, watch them shuffle across the crease and try and get their pads outside of off stump. So it does make sense because you're taking one dismissal. Maybe you're not taking it away, but you're making it a lot less likely, aren't you?
Yes, Jimenez, you were saying something. So
this seems to be a consistent trend with the South African batters, where if you look at the percentage of balls they played on the back foot compared to the Indian batters, it's a little more. So 4 to 5 meter length, they played 23% on the back foot versus 19% for India. And 5 to 6 meter length, they played 67% on the back foot versus 60% for India. So this seems to be a plan where they're not committing on the front foot and they're waiting for the ball to come to them and then defend at the last moment. It probably helps that the ball isn't turning that much when the Indians are bowling. So this seems to be a consistent strategy.
Does it make sense to say that they play off the back foot while they're defending and when they come forward, they're sweeping many of the occasions? Yeah. Because the sweep shot numbers, I think we can put that up, the sweep shot numbers and percentages. Yeah. Sweeping percentage of shots. Jimenez, can you just take us through this, please?
Yeah, so basically, South Africa has swept much more than India in terms of percentage, but their average is much lower than India, which means that they are probably sweeping a lot more balls. They're being a little less judicious in terms of what to sweep. Indians are much safer in terms of picking the sweep. So this doesn't have the front foot, back foot numbers, but since South Africa is sweeping a lot more, it makes sense that they must be defending on the back foot and then doing this on the front foot, right?
Exactly. And that's precisely why I asked you to bring the slide up. If he just takes the slide off, I want to ask this one final question before we nail it. If a team coming to the subcontinent, and I asked AB this question, and obviously AB hasn't probably seen it firsthand, but if a team's coming to the subcontinent, they're saying, okay, I'm going to defend off the back foot here. My average defense against your good length ball is going to be off the back foot. And if I'm coming forward, I'm not going to be defending two, three balls on the trot. I'm going to hit you, sweep you. I'm going to reverse sweep you for a single, sweep you for a single. Doesn't that make it a lot more harder to draw the batsman forward, Himanesh or Jarrad? Who wants to take that?
Jarrad?
Well, yeah. And I think that is something that I would have thought with the new ball, that's a harder thing to do, right? I think it's harder to play off the back foot consistently with the new ball because it skids. But once it gets old, that seems like a pretty good tactic. So it'd be interesting to see how they went defending the newer ball. But the other thing I would add, and I think you're right, Ash, I think you're 100%, you probably have to bowl fuller to these guys, right? And you really have to say to them, if you want to sweep the very full ball, we think you're going to miss one. Right, we don't think you're going to hit it consistently. But the other thing with the South Africans is, I've always thought that they defend with quite hard hands against spinners, right? And so maybe that's what this is. It's harder to defend with hard hands off the back foot. Off the back foot, it's a natural softening of the grip, right? Yeah. But when you go, if you watch South Africans, even when they play pace traditionally, they don't do it as much now. They quite often have very hard hands when they push through the ball because, you know, of the way that things the things that sort of go there. So if they've come up with a way of doing that, you have to counter that by being fuller to them and say, if you want to go on the back foot here, good luck. And if you want to sweep the very full ball, surely that brings in LBW even more so, I would have thought at that point.
The reason I brought this up was if in case a team's making 300 and the other team's making 400, essentially on a good surface, India would want to bat second and probably get a lead or at least match up with the score, which is not happening at this point of time. The bowlers don't eventually have the runs to play with these sweeps going at 20s and 30s. And that's where the problem is beginning. And we've gone really deep into this batting of spin, bowling spin and everything. We've got really deep to the roots, Jarrad. So I want to nail this facet. After having spoken all this, we've deliberated quite a bit about our spin bowling, the ability to counter spin, what's armor done, how have we batted, etc., etc. I just want to nail this down and say, are we conveniently saying that there is an essential problem to the roots, or is there a superficial problem like we are discussing a sacking or discussing somebody to go, which does always sound very trivial to me?
you would both be aware of the rule of unintended consequences. Right? India had a problem. They weren't winning test matches away from home at the rate that the talent that they were producing suggested, right? So what did they have to do? They had to get better at bowling seam and they had to get better at playing seam. And so they did that. We just had the greatest era ever of Indian seam bowling, so much so that, you know, Umesh Yadav, who was bowling fantastically, was basically not even needed in some of these games, right? And you just had, you know, Virat Kohli, Ajinkya Rahane, KL Rahul, Rohit Sharma, bring a players of pace. A lot of that comes back from, you know, the fact that the pitches had started to change in Ranji Trophy and fast bowlers did have confidence and they did feel, you know, they were coming into test matches with good averages and taking wickets and everything else. But the unintended consequences of that is that you are not going to play spin as well. There's only, you're taking a bunch of sand out of one bucket and you're putting it into another bucket. It has to affect that. And at the same time, you know, you were going for World Test Championship points. So everywhere in the world is bowling friendly conditions basically now, except for, you know, New Zealand on occasion, right? Almost everywhere else. Sri Lanka and New Zealand. They're the only two where there's any runs left.
They're going to Sri Lanka in August. I don't think we're going to get very batting friendly conditions, Jarrad.
No, but traditionally, have a look at the last couple of years. The batting, all the top batters in the world now come from Sri Lanka because they actually have flat wickets over there. But there haven't been many runs scored, right? And so you have this situation where no one's making runs anywhere and you have destabilized the main skill that you have. The other thing that you did in making those pitches so friendly towards spin bowling is it actually allowed for occasionally it to be a coin flip game. Like you shouldn't be losing to Tom Hartley or Matt Kuhneman or Steve O'Keefe, right? And then, but conversely to that, right, the other issue that you have there is that your home batters are feeling really, really uncomfortable because they are not making any runs. So you actually maybe made Indian cricket stronger all around, but you have opened up a new avenue for teams to be able to beat you at home that you did not have before. Having said all of that, I think if this is a young team that is learning their craft, Gautam Gambhir's got some ideas that, you know, we could do a whole podcast just on the fact that he loves the all-rounders. Maybe that doesn't work. He loves the right-hand, left-hand. Maybe that doesn't work. You know, all of these sorts of things that he's done, he might need to change. But when it comes down to it, it just looks like a team low in confidence who went up against, let's be honest, the world's best test team at the moment. And they got a bit of a spanking. Sometimes when you go up against the best teams, you're supposed to lose.
That's true. That's a very good facet. Himanish, your closing remarks?
I think we have to have a long-term plan in terms of how are we playing test cricket in India? Like, what are the pitches we play on? What are the skills we want to develop in the domestic game? How are we getting the signal from the domestic game to select players? How are we taking teams out with our bowlers? This has to be a long-term plan, right? It can't be just a band-aid solution. And we have to build a test team again. So when we were winning from 2015 to 2022, most of those pitches were classic true pitches that used to turn on day 4 and 5. And we knew how to get teams out on those pitches, even if they scored 500 in the first inning. Right, so we have to build a long-term plan. It can't be short-term solutions. It can't be bombast. It has to be very calculated and very
close. Everyone. Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Sack everyone. That can't be it. Right? So Gautam Gambhir has some wacky ideas, but he can't be the only one responsible for this, because ultimately it's a game of skill and who's, you know, playing for you. And you
the
have
last to, thing, the last right. thing I'd want to see is players shrugging away responsibility. And that's the last thing you want to see.
Yeah.
But also, it should be players, it should be coaches, it should be administrators. They decided on those Ranji wickets, right? Yeah. They went all in on the pitches that spin more in India. Maybe we went too far.
There's one thing that we should agree upon, Jared, and it's not because I've been playing for the BCCI and the Indian team for a very long time, and the administration part of it has been quite stable all the time.
I think so.
They haven't made very, very hasty decisions. They've always relied on long-term. Of course, everybody will have an opinion to it, but I just personally do think they're not going to have knee-jerk reactions, which we already have heard of.
I know what you're leading me into. I know what you want me to say.
Let's not go there.
If Indian fans at the moment want Gautam Gambhir sacked, right? And if you get to the culture where you listen to the fan base and you make rash decisions, that leads you down to Pakistan. That's what Pakistan do. The administrators there make rash decisions all the time based on what the fan base says. And it is terrible. It has ruined Pakistan cricket because no one feels comfortable in Pakistan cricket from the top to the bottom anymore, right? You have to understand that if you have appointed a coach, he's had some success and he's had some failures. You have to understand that maybe he's got it wrong. Give him a chance to see if he can come up with something. This is a man who came with a very strong theory of what he wanted to do. It hasn't worked. Let's imagine that South Africa won that second series against England under Bazball. I don't think that they would have stopped the Bazball theory at that stage. They would have been like, no, we planned this. We've thought about this. It didn't work in this series. Let's see how we go from here, right? And maybe the problem with Bazball is over a long period of time, they haven't pivoted away. Let's see if Gautam Gambhir can do that. But you don't want to be in a situation where he gets fired, the next coach comes in and you lose the first series. You're in this exact same bucket again, right? You have to be smarter than that.
Jared submitted what he thinks. Himanish has also given a submission. I'm going to try and phrase this as carefully as possible because I'm going to make my submission an appeal. I've always believed that international cricket or anything in life is about finding your problem and finding your problem statement first and then finding solutions for this. And any successful international cricketer would be very, very good at finding solutions for problems that he goes through every single day or every single game that he encounters, right? I really do think this should be a solution-driven problem, identifying the problem, getting down to the problem, because the villain is actually the problem. The villain is not an individual. And if people do believe that I have some axe to grind, which very easy to believe in this era where people think everything is a PR or a paid sort of an activity, where a lot of things need to develop. And when you have to develop so many facets of your game and your engine room, you need the collaboration of so many people into it, which means you carry everybody along. How do you carry everybody along? With clear communication, clear definition of a problem statement, and finally, tailoring solutions for each one of them to address the problem statement. And it is a genuine submission that fans, of course, people are going to be emotional. India is a hugely emotional cricketing nation. I do get it. But my attempt always through my channel has been to take cricket as cricket and what the problems are. Problem statement is actually the villain. Let's recognize the different problem statements and not go after individuals, because that's not going to turn things around. The individuals also need to understand the problem statement. As long as they are willing to understand the problem statement and find solutions, we are in a good place. And that's what I would like to hear. sure, sure, you can go with a lot of decisions when Jared said there is changing, there is ideologies, wacky ideas, left-handers, everything. All these things are up for debate. And it's very human to err, to identify the errors and to identify solutions is what my plea would be. And that has to be the approach going forward. Is that a fair summation, Jared and Imanish?
No, I think definitely. I think when it comes down to it, the fan base is reacting the way the fan base should be reacting. Right? Like, it's up to us as, what did you call us? The cricket geeks, right? Like, it's up to us to be like, whoa. Like, this idea that we're getting, every time we say something about a positive about someone like Gautam Gambhir, like someone accused me of taking money from Gautam Gambhir yesterday. Right? I was like, look, if he's willing to pay, I'm available.
Did you? Right? Did you? Because I just heard that I took some money. Yeah.
He must have a lot of spare money at the moment to be throwing around. But that is how the fan base is supposed to react, right? You know, I follow basketball and, you know, other sports as well. That's what happens. They go crazy. But if you follow, if fans ran sporting teams, your team would never win. There is a reason we have adults in a room and they're making those decisions. And what we're trying to say here is there are structural issues. There are individual issues with the coaching. There are individuals, as you said, with the players. Players need to take responsibility. But when it comes down to it, what we are actually saying is there is a reason this is happening. How can we find a way of fixing this as quickly as possible to make the fans happy? And that's what you want.
Great summation, Jared. And thank you so much, Himnish, once again. This has been probably one of the most intense conversations I've had on cricket, and I've enjoyed it as well. It's been very intellectual. I'm sure it's a very... Sorry?
My pleasure entirely.
No, I hope the fans really enjoyed it. The number of data that came through, the way we talked about batting techniques, the way it's changed, the way we talked about spin bowling, the way we summarized it by saying that we need to get a solution for the problem statement. I mean, there are several thoughts. There are several schools of thoughts. Whether you guys agree or don't agree, you can always have the comment section. You have the liberty and the democracy of speech to be able to leave your thoughts there. And we would read. And when we do combine again, we are sure to have a long and a cracking episode just like this one. I don't know how fans are going to receive it, but my God, I really loved it, Jared. I really loved it, Himanish. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us, man.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bahram Kazi and Estelle Vasudevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.